Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting on today, September the 20th, 2023. We'll stand and say the pledge in a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First, we need to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Peter, to be adopted. Agenda is presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. County Administrator's report.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I have a few things to report this evening, and I was thinking about pulling up here. Okay. So, Lauren, just have a few new employees to announce. Charles Fridley started September 11th as an EMT ALS in the Emergency Services Department, along with Amanda Trent, who started with the Emergency Services Department as an EMT BLS. And again, she started September 11th as well. We also had Jean Kotowski started with the sheriff's office as a deputy sheriff, and she started September 11th as well. So a little, just kind of a brief summary of the Fluvanna County Fair. So the 2023 County Fair was held August 17th through the 19th, with the carnival only on the 16th. So this year was record attendance with over 8,500 visitors. 7,260 of them were paying visitors. There were 66 non-food vendors, 22 food vendors. New events were the Bar C Ranch Petting Zoo, Axewoman of Maine, and The Works. Fair Board paid for parking on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And again, a big thank you to the Fair Board, Wade Parrish, Kristen Kropp, Rachel Crenshaw, Channing Snotty, George Goen, Gene Goen, Erica Mitchell, and Susan Edgington for making this year such a great success. And again, Mr. Spitzer will be back on the October 4th board meeting to give a little more detailed breakdown of kind of the numbers and, you know, kind of what was pulled in and a little more a thorough county fair breakdown.
And I want to commend it. It was such a great job. And the rodeo, just when I went over to that, I just found myself almost in awe that we were having that rodeo as well done as it was here in Fluvanna.
Yeah, the rodeo draws huge numbers, and you can see that picture. It's a great picture of the rodeo there in the middle. I mean, it gets great turnout, and I think every year we keep on increasing attendance. I think in part too because of the rodeo, and obviously other things as well, but the rodeo is a good draw on Saturday night. So
yeah, axe women might have been a draw too.
And then we had our Grooving at the Grove. The event was held on September 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. It was a Saturday. So this was the first community concert at Pleasant Grove Park since the front stage was completed. We had about 220 people attend the event. Again, the event was organized by members of EdTac and a community member. Again, with EdTac, Susie Morris, Kathy Tatro, Peggy Shanklin, Ben Shaw, Jeff Porter, and then Jennifer Schmeck and Aaron Spitzer. And then Trey Mitchell, a community member, secured a $250 sponsor from Monticello Realtors to help advertise the event. Again, we had music by Route 6, food trucks from DeMary's, Local Eats, and Mobetta Italian. A beer garden was operated by Flag. And we had a little last-minute surprise the night before that Friday night with Mother Nature. There was probably a 2 to 250-year-old oak that kind of stood right in the middle of the area in front of the stage that fell over that night before with the storm that we got. So Saturday morning, Mr. Spitzer called me and myself and lots of Melinda Payne, Matt Stansel, Aaron Spitzer, Anthony Tanner, and then we got Ronald Bragg Tree Service out there to limit as best as we could and chip it before the event that evening. And it was literally, I think the trunk of that tree was probably a good 3 feet, if not bigger.
It was a good conversational piece.
It was a very good conversational piece. And if you go by there now, you'll never, except yes. for seeing some a big old dirt pile, you won't even know it's been there. But it was a big tree and a little monkey wrench, but it all worked out well. And then again, there's future plans to have these monthly concert series starting back in May through September of next year. Again, we wanted to try and get one in before the year was out. Like I said, it was a good dry run, so good event for, and that was kind of organized by EdTac and some community members. And I think that's it. Like I said, some upcoming board meetings, October 4th at 5 p.m. we have a regular meeting, October 18th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting, and then November 1st at 5 p.m. we have a regular meeting here in the Performing Arts Center. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the board.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Dahl? You've had a lot of excitement around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good excitement. And now I'm going to open the first public comments. Please come to the lectern here in the front. Give your name and address and speak to the board. Anyone like to speak to the board?
And Ms. Booker, maybe yes. You want to remind them if it's for the public hearing, maybe to wait towards the...
Okay, thank you. If your comments are pertaining to the public hearing, then we're going to have next save it until that time. But if it's just general comments or whatever, that goes is for the public hearing.
Yeah, that's the dogs running at large public hearing.
Right. Oh. All right.
Yep.
Anyone would like to speak?
Good evening. I'm Marta Kane, CEO at JABA, and Ginger Dillard, COO, is here with me. We're going to split the time. I'm going to be the quick one tonight. I first wanted to start off by thanking you all so much for all your support for the fiscal year 24 budget. And in front of you is an annual report, says JABA 2022. I just wanted to let you see that in terms of impact and highlights and some outcomes, and it gives some numbers. Obviously, it's not this most recent completed year, but it still gives you a good trend. Ginger is going to give you the information more specific to Fluvanna, so I wanted to leave most of the time for her, but I wanted to be here tonight to be sure and say thank you.
Thank you. I am Ginger Dillard. I work for the Jefferson Area Board for Aging, and I used to live in Fluvanna many a moon ago. So you have with you as well our outcomes reports for FY22. I am not going to go through every one of these programs. You have plenty of time to read that on your own, but I did want to lift up some numbers for you. So we served over 500 individuals for our basic information and assistance. That's people who are calling our senior helpline and speaking to our case management staff, looking for support for a wide range of topics that they might need. That was over 3,300 contacts. So that's us calling back and forth with these individuals and looking up their resources multiple times. In partnership with you, we served 95 people in the community centers. And that was over three counties. Some of your members actually also attend Southern Albemarle and Louisa community centers as well, but you get credit for that effort as well. And that was 7,600 hours of service. So those were the activities and the trips and everything that was planned. And we were very pleased to partner with Parks and Recs, with Faith and Aaron to provide those services. And for home delivered meals, we served 21 people with over 3,400 meals. So those are just the numbers of the programs you're probably going to be most familiar with. So for a total, we served 1,254 unduplicated people. But if you look at them for each time they came back, that was almost 7,000 times or people that came through for Fluvanna for services. So overall, when we look at our performance and our outcome measurements, because we don't look just at numbers, we look at how people feel like the services were delivered and the changes that it made in their lives. We had very high satisfaction rates across the board from Fluvanna residents about the services that we did deliver for them. 98%, 99% in our information and assistance. And I think it was a great year for us overall. One of the programs I did want to make sure that we talked about was insurance counseling, because for those folks who are on Medicare, open enrollment is about to happen again, October 15th through December 7th. Last year, we saved people $1.6 million in this planning district for less than, just a little over 2,000 people that we saw in that 7-week period. So it's really important for people to have the opportunity to change their insurance plans. And so we'd love to welcome you, to invite your community members to please get in touch with us so that we can help them again this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have all the young people on this board. They're not even waiting for Medicare yet.
Especially you.
Especially you, right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but some of us are better looking.
And next week when I come, I'm going to bring you the Java coloring book that you can, and a couple of crayons, where they have taken each program and illustrated it, and someone drew a picture. And I forgot, I meant to bring it to you tonight, but it'll be fun. If you can't do it, you can give it to one of your grandchildren, young person, to do it. Right now, we are going to go to public hearing.
Ms. Booker, I'm not sure if there's anyone else for public comment.
I'm sorry. Anyone else would like? I forget about people online, too. No one else?
I don't see anyone else online raising your hand to speak.
Thank you.
Comments.
Thank you for reminding me. Okay, now we go to public hearing. This afternoon, we're doing a public hearing on dogs running at large ordinance. And before we start, I'd like to always go over the rules and procedures for public hearing. The purpose of a public hearing is to receive testimony from the public on certain resolutions, ordinances, or amendments prior to taking action. A hearing is not a dialogue or a debate. Its express purpose is to receive additional facts, comments, and opinions on subject items. Speakers should approach the lectern so that they may be visible and audible to the board. Each speaker should clearly state his or her name and address. All comments should be directed to the board. All questions should be directed to the chairperson. Members of the board are not expected to respond to questions, and respond to questions shall be made at the chairman's discretion. Speakers are encouraged to contact staff regarding unsolved concerns or to receive additional information. Speakers with questions are encouraged to call county staff prior to the public hearing. Speakers should be brief and avoid repetition of previously presented comments. Action. At the conclusion of the public hearing on each item, the chairperson will close the public hearing, the board will proceed with its deliberation, and will act on or formally postpone action on such item prior to proceeding to other agenda items. Further public comments after the public hearing has been closed generally will not be permitted. So, Mr. Whitman, our attorney?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. There's been much discussion from residents and representatives of the Sheriff's Office over the years for dogs running a large ordinance, while also trying to find a balance for all residents in the community. So currently, Fluvanna County only has a dog running a large ordinance that's applicable to Lake Monticello subdivision, which at a minimum needs to be updated to reflect the correct magisterial districts to reflect the most recent redistricting. So running a large ordinance would be applicable countywide. And just for clarification, this is different than a leash law ordinance. This does not say your dog has to be on a leash at all times. So the running at large ordinance would be enforced by sworn law enforcement officers. And basically what it means is that your dog has to be under the control of the owner. So as long as the dogs can be called back to the owner, you know, and the owner's there within a reasonable distance to call back, then the dogs are not running at large. So there are exemptions under the ordinance for dogs engaged in lawful hunting or training for hunting, and also dogs assisting in farming activities. Within Lake Monticello, it may result in a civil penalty of not more than $100 the first time that it's witnessed. Outside of Lake Monticello, the law enforcement officer can take the dog into possession, return the dog to the owner or custodian with a warning. And if the owner or custodian can't be found, the dog can be transported to the SPCA, and the owner will be liable for the cost of boarding at the SPCA. Outside of Lake Monticello, in the county, the owner or custodian would, if they have three or more violations within 2 years, then they would have a $100 civil penalty. There is mandatory language required under Virginia Code 3.2-6538, which requires that a locality has a running at large ordinance. The ordinance must provide that the owner or custodian of any dog found running at large in a pack would be subject to a civil penalty of $100 for dogs so found. So there wouldn't be a warning in that case. And it's mandatory language is shall rather than may. A dog should be deemed running at large in a pack if it's running at large in the company of one or more dogs that are also running at large. So there would not be a warning as the clarification, the difference of that subsection of the ordinance.
Any questions for?
And I will say I looked at surrounding counties. I looked at Albemarle's ordinance, Louise's, and Gilchrist's, and that's where I came up with the language for the ordinance.
Okay. And then just for the board's knowledge, we also have ACO deputy, animal control officer deputy, Strong on Zoom too. Okay. So if anyone has any questions, and again, I think she came out previously when we brought this to the board originally.
And I sent her the ordinance, and I also sent it to Chief Wells and Lake Monticello, and also sent it to the sheriff's office. So they have all seen it and commented.
All right. Board members, do you have any questions?
So I had a citizen that sent me a question. This is a person with former law enforcement experience. And the person was questioning somewhat of a lack of clarity in section F. It speaks to within a reasonable time or in a reasonable time as reference. So it speaks to a reasonable time. And what it says, if the owner or custodian of the dog cannot be located to take custody of the dog in a reasonable amount of time, the dog may be transported to the Fluvanna County SPCA for impoundment, and the dog's owner shall be liable for all costs of impoundment. And again, the citizen was just questioning if it leaves enough gray area, what is a reasonable amount of time, and the concern about somewhat the burden that it maybe puts on law enforcement to decide what a reasonable amount of time is, and to the dog owner to interpret what a reasonable amount of time is. My response to the citizen was that some parts of this were intentionally written somewhat vague to allow law enforcement to give some leniency and work through it. So anyway, I just wanted to bring it up and see if anybody else had any thoughts. And
yeah, the purpose was to give the law enforcement officer discretion to give time. I mean, it could be a neighbor that has a key to get the dog back in the house or back into the fence and yard done. But to give a little discretion to the law enforcement officer, a little bit of time to get the dog back in the yard or back in the house. So since it's not actually subject to, a penalty, that section, a reasonable standard is fine. So that's not probably something that's going to court where I'm not have to argue that was a reasonable amount of time.
Gotcha.
Okay. Any other questions?
And do you have any questions for Deputy Strong?
Yeah. Anything for Deputy Strong? Deputy Strong, do you have any comments? She's online.
She is online. Yep, she's
online. No, I do not.
Okay.
Not at this time.
Thank you for being here. All right, so right now I will open the public comment section on the public hearing. You can come to the lectern and speak to the board. Now it's open public hearing.
Hi, my name is Sandra Lindner Turner. I live at 1801 East River Road, Fourth Union. On Memorial Day, Monday, I woke up to hear my dogs barking. I let them out thinking it's just a raccoon or something else. And they started barking really weird. I went outside and two dogs that were my neighbors had dug under our 6-foot fence. I saw them kill my goose. Oh. Now understand, I'm a hobby farmer. These are my pets. I saw them kill the goose. I stood there seeing two pit bulls staring at me, and I only had a flashlight, and I'm like, I don't know how to contain them. I didn't even think about what if they turned on me at that moment. I, you know, could have turned out really bad. The dogs ran away. They ran under the fence. I secured the fence. My three ducks were already dead. One was dying. One would die before the vet got there, and the other was put down by the vet. I turned around to call for my three pet sheep, and they didn't come. And I went to my barn, to which I found my pet sheep, Marco. His leg, as the vet described, was degloved, which means that the skin around it was basically pulled down. It's just the skin is down, and you have pictures. He was bitten in the hindquarters. He was bit in many places. My other two sheep were also bitten. I knew who the dogs were because on Facebook I follow Lost Pets of Fluvanna. And in February or January, I can't remember, a neighbor was saying she didn't know where her dog was. And it ended up in my driveway. We have a very long driveway from Route 6 back to our farm. I called her and I told her where it was. And in that discussion, I found out she lived at a house that's on Gale Hill Road and Route 6. And I knew which house she was. And I told her where we were. And she thanked me. About a month or two later, I see her dogs again, the same puppy with another dog in my driveway. So I called her and I said, hey, your dogs are out again. And this time her answer was, oh, yeah, the puppy's with my older dog. They'll come back. Fluvanna County Sheriffs came out that morning. They were wonderful. They were to deal with me. As you can tell, I still get emotional about it. I told them all this. They seemed to have known the house, like they had maybe previous contact with this person before. And when I talked to the animal control person, I had the impression that she had spoken to this person and told her that the dogs running at large could cause some problems. If there was a law that had given the sheriffs more power, maybe my animals wouldn't have died or been hurt. I have $2,000. It's $1,800 and some dollars worth of vet bills, damage to the chicken coop, which is in there. That was from the dogs actually trying to get into my coop. They never got into the chickens, and all the other damages. I just wanted y'all to know about it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Sorry for your loss. Anyone else would like to come to the board?
Well, good evening to each of you. My name is Charlie White. I live at 55 Kendall Court in Palmyra in the Sycamore Square development behind Dollar General and CVS there. I'm the president of the Property Owners Association. I'll say up front that the POA has not taken any official position on this issue that we're discussing. I have heard from, I'll say a handful, four, five, six residents, owners of our properties, who have all lobbied for a law like this. We do have some owners who let their dogs run free. Not many. Most of them are very good about walking their dogs on leashes, keeping them under control. But I have heard and I've seen in my own yard, neighbor's dogs come into my lawn and dig in the yard, defecate on our property. I can't recount any episodes of violence, as we just heard. One came close, I guess. One neighbor of mine was out with her young daughter, 5-6 years old, and their dog, taking a walk in the evening, as many of our residents do. And another neighbor's dog was out in their yard. As they approached with their own dog, the dog in the yard became very aggressive, frightening the young girl to tears and just ruining their walk. They had to turn around and go home. The dog never left the property, so there wasn't any physical harm done. I would observe, as I read the language of the proposed ordinance, it does say a dog, paragraph C, a dog shall be deemed to run at large while roaming or running off the property of its owner or custodian and not under its owner's or custodian's immediate control. I guess the neighbor that was walking her daughter and the dog would not have had grounds to apply this ordinance because the dog was on the owner's property. I wonder if this said or not under its owner's or custodian's control, would she have had an opportunity to complain with grounds, even if the dog was in question was on its owner's property. It wasn't under the owner's control. So that's the only specific observation I'd make. Otherwise, I think our owners would favor passing this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board about this ordinance? Anyone online?
Let me see here. I don't see anyone coming off mute online right now.
Okay, so I will close the public comment and come back to the board for any discussion. Board members?
Could I ask our attorney, Mr. Whitten, if what the man just spoke about, is that something that is legal?
So the language in Section C is directly from the state code. The language that says, for the purposes of this section, a dog should be deemed to run large while roaming or running off the property of its owner or custodian. That's language straight from the state code. So we want to be able to differ from that language so that the dog would have to be off the property.
Well, a lot of owners might have an electronic fence that keeps the dog in. Technically, that would call it being under control. Mm-hmm. You know, if the owner's inside the house, I mean, otherwise, you'd literally have to have owners sit outside in that type of situation.
I've been a farmer for a very long time. I've had sheep killed, and at one time it happened, and my husband wasn't around, he wasn't home. And I really had a mess. I didn't know what to do. If some of the sheep had been run into a little pond and they had drowned, and I couldn't get them out of the water, so I called the sheriff, and he came and he said he agreed that it was a terrible mess. And I saw the dogs, but by the time the police came, they were gone. So I understand what you went through. And thank you to the sheriff, who's great about helping people out.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so I need, we have a motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the amendments to County Code Section 4-2-2 to make the dog running at large ordinance applicable countywide.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have the motion made by Mrs. Eager and second by Mrs. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye. Thank you all. Okay, now we are at action matters. First B, Palmyra U.S. Bank Road 76 resolution of support. Mr. Miles?
Yes, good evening. Chair Booker, members of the board. This is just more of a procedural request for you all tonight. But a little background, the U.S. Bike Route 76 is a national on-road bike route that extends from Missouri to Jamestown, Virginia. It passes through Fluvanna County, primarily along Route 53 as U.S. Bike Route 76, and then along Courthouse Road within the Palmyra area and near Main Street. We're currently working with VDOT, and there's a need from Fluvanna County and the TJPDC Regional Planning Office for updated resolutions. There is public support now, has been, to reroute U.S. Bike Route 76 into the Palmyra Main Street area in order to encourage biking and for folks to enjoy the Main Street area. This is part of the Palmyra Village streetscape improvements and part of the current your current two-year goals as item C3. And as we've said before, there's been a lot of community volunteer work completed in the Main Street area over the years. This is just a diagram of basically the red route is the current route shown in the center of the slide, where you come off of Courthouse down 15 and then back through the roundabout and up 53 and 15. So what the proposal has been, or is the VDOT Central Office, the state bikeway and pedestrian planner, is asking for a recertification or re-resolution of this request, and it would basically show the green route where you would come in eastbound and then westbound, and also can you also traverse through the Court Square area, and that green area is the closure part of, if you all remember, of streetscape phase one. That's the closure that reunifies the Court Square green area.
And really what VDOT's trying to do, since we've got this VDOT streetscape project and that's kind of some of the changes that are going to happen in there, they want to make sure that the Route 76 reroute reflects what's happening with the streetscape project. So again, there was discussion, I want to say this came up probably a year ago, if not maybe a little bit longer. There was some local bikers and organizations that really wanted to kind of reroute the route through the Main Street area. From one, just to kind of provide a stopping spot. I think the Cunningham Methodist Church, I think, too, provided some, you know, water or some things for bikers to get out, you know, kind of get off the road a little bit should they want to. And as we try to develop the Main Street area, it would just kind of provide, you know, more of an area to kind of go into instead of just coming down 15, so.
Okay, any questions?
And the key part is there's no cost to the board for this request. It's still all under VDOT's purview, so no increase of any budgetary requirement costs. Okay.
Any questions from anyone?
Large part of that thing comes from K601 the entire night.
That's great, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once I was riding my bike and I met a young woman who was really starting, I think she started in Williamsburg, and she was going to bike all the way across the country.
Wow.
Set of places to stay.
They had mom and dad's house on the map, marked on the map.
Place to stay. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Because
years ago, people would come through and stop at your house. People would, you know, put people up and let them camp out, and it's not the same. Can you show the resolution so that people can see what that says? Okay. Here is the resolution, and pull it down a little bit. Okay, this is a resolution supporting the rerouting of U.S. Bike Route 76 from U.S. 15 onto Main Street, and that's Route.
Yep, say Route 1001.
1001 in historic Palmyra. So it goes into a lot of detail. The resolution does very specific on what is happening, so I hope that's going to be good. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We have someone to make a motion.
I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled a resolution supporting the rerouting of U.S. Bike Route 76 from U.S. 15 onto Main Street as State Route 1001 in Historic Palmyra.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and a second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Authorization to advertise for a public hearing and ordinance to authorize the collection of a 5% transient occupancy tax. And this is by our attorney, Mr. Whitten.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So currently, there is not a transient occupancy tax in the county, also known as a lodging tax. Virginia Code Section 58.1-3819 does authorize the county to levy a transient occupancy tax on hotels, motels, boarding houses, travel campgrounds, and other facilities offering guest rooms rented out for continuous occupancy for fewer than 30 days. So currently, the county doesn't have any hotels, but this would be for like Airbnb, VRBO type rentals at this time. So the proposal is to enact county sections 20-11-1 through 20-11-10. So the tax will be imposed on the total price paid by the customer for the use or possession of the room. And the accommodations intermediary, which is like Expedia or Hotel, you know, one VRBO, or accommodations provider would collect the tax and remit the tax to the treasurer. So the person collecting the tax would send the report to the Commissioner of Revenue, which would show the total room charges collected and the total taxes required to be collected. And then the accommodations intermediary would submit the property addresses and gross receipts on a monthly basis. So that'd be like all the Airbnbs or VRBOs in the county would be sent to the Commissioner of Revenue. So the accommodations intermediary is a person other than the accommodations provider that facilitates the sale of the accommodation and charges a room charge to the customer, including an accommodations fee to the customer. So you know, like Airbnb, there's always a fee, Airbnb fee you have to pay. So that'd be still, the lodging tax would be subject to that as well. And so, or if they collect a room charge from the customer or charge a fee other than the accommodations fee to the customer. So the accommodations provider is someone other than the accommodations intermediary who is basically any person that furnishes the accommodations to the public. So that'd be someone who just rents their house out, you know, for less than 30 days and doesn't use a management service or a booking service. And so basically it's a sale or use, sale or use or possession of the property.
Mr. Whitten, like some of these providers have some pretty large cleaning fees. Would those be applicable to this?
The lodging tax is on. So I was looking, for instance, in Albemarle County, my cousin has an Airbnb, so I looked up hers. And so if you pretend that you're booking it, it'll show like the base fee, the cleaning fee, the Airbnb fee, and then Albemarle actually has 8% tax, and the 8% tax is based on all those costs, and then that's the total charge that you pay, and then Airbnb would then, well, and also the 5.3% sales tax. So, and then, so it's pretty, it's a high, we're proposing a 5% fee. Albemarle's actually 8%. They changed the code a couple of years ago where you could go higher than 5%. It used to be that it was just 2%, and then counties had to get special authority to go to up to 5%, and then counties were getting special authority to go to 7% and 8%. So I think the General Assembly just got sick of changing it every year, so they pretty much made it open-ended about 2 years ago.
And I will say, mostly when you look at some of our surrounding neighbors and stuff, I mean, pretty much everyone has a lodging tax or a transient occupancy tax.
Louisa does, Beach One does.
Yeah, and they vary between, I think 8% is on the high end, but most of them vary between 2% to 5%. 2% to 5%. Yeah. 2 or 5% is kind of the norm.
So the proposal is 5%. Any excess from the rate over 2%, but not exceeding 5%, would be designated and spent solely for tourism and travel and marketing of tourism or initiatives as determined after consultation with the local tourism industry organization, so the Chamber of Commerce, including representative of any lodging properties located in the county. So it's basically to attract travelers to the county increase occupancy. So I have talked to our economic development director regarding the use of that 3%. And she actually just hired a new, I don't know the exact title, tourism and
Small business and tourism specialist, yeah.
Yes. Who is really marketing Louisiana County where this 3% could be used for that.
And I'll tell you, so there's a report all localities kind of show what their revenues are for different things. It's called the Auditor Public Accounts. They have this local revenue comparative report. And so I went through there and I looked at every locality, kind of what they have for lodging tax. I'm assuming, since we don't have any large hotels at this point, and what I did, I went through and I looked at localities that had a really small number in there, and then I basically went back and went to that locality and I typed in, okay, well, let me see what type of hotels you have in here. And mostly the ones that had the really small fee, there was no hotels, or they were mostly like just Airbnbs or a bed and breakfast or things like that. But I can tell you probably right now with what we have, I would not expect that we would get probably more than $5,000 a year, maybe $10,000, but I think that's kind of where it would be at this point. Certainly as more Airbnbs come online and we take a look at that, or if a hotel comes online, you know, that'll be in place and it'll change, but that's probably what we're looking at from a revenue standpoint at this point.
And do we know how many Airbnbs there are, or?
When I searched Louisiana County on Airbnb, it showed around 40. And I didn't look on VRBO or other sites such as that. And I don't know how exact the parameters, like some maybe right on the border.
Yeah, I can tell you I did a Fluvanna County Airbnb search too. And so when I did that, actually a couple of them, not many, because I went through every single one of them. Some of them actually showed up in Goochland County.
Even though I put in Fluvanna County.
But I mean, I think most of them are there, but you know, the one thing that we'll have to bring back to the board is, you know, the kind of the revisiting the discussion of short-term rentals in general too. But I think this is kind of the first step to get something in place. Again, we've got Airbnbs, people are coming here, and maybe the Airbnbs are not, they don't necessarily meet our code at this point, but you know, we're trying to kind of recoup those visitors coming into our county.
And there's not a lot of collection for us in this case, because the collection is happening through the agency.
Correct.
So they just sent us the check, so there's no real overhead associated with the management of this program.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any additional staff that would be needed for it.
Okay, any questions or other discussion? Anyone?
And I did send the ordinance to the Commissioner of Revenue, and I didn't receive any feedback.
Thanks. All right, we have a motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors advertise the amendments to County Code 20-11-1 through 20-11-10 for a public hearing to be held October 18th, 2023.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien and second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye.
I have a
yes.
Not relevant question. What are those two little squiggly things after the code?
That means when there's multiple sections. That's just the symbol for section.
And do you say squiggly, squiggly?
I think it looks better than just writing out section.
I think it's like called I raise your squiggle.
You learn something every day. All right, D. Next we go to D. Authorization to advertise for a public hearing an ordinance to authorize a revenue share of $1,400 per megawatt for solar energy projects and energy storage systems. And this is also by our attorney, Dan Witt.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So we had a presentation at our last meeting that Mr. Dodd regarding revenue share. So currently there's not a revenue share in the county on solar energy projects. Right now we use the machinery and tools tax and SCC valuation for over 25 megawatts. So Virginia Code Section 58.1-2636 authorizes any locality to assess a revenue share of up to $1,400 per megawatt as measured by alternating current generation capacity of the nameplate capacity of the facility. This is all interesting. Based on submissions by the facility owner to the interconnecting utility. On solar projects, or up to 1,400 per megawatt in alternating current capacity on the energy storage system. So right now, energy storage systems are not an allowed zoning use. Eventually, in the next few months, we're going to be bringing that to the Planning Commission, Mr. Miles says. So for now, we have this language proposed to be in the revenue share ordinance, just so we don't have to come back in 2 months and add it. But just to be clear, this is not a allowed zoning use at this point. These are the best systems, better energy storage systems that that's referring to. So the proposal is to enact County Code Sections 20-12-1 to 20-12-3. It would authorize a revenue share of 1,400 per megawatt for solar energy projects and energy storage systems. And the rate would be increased by 10% on July 1st, 2026, and every 5 years thereafter by 10%, and that's language from the state code. So it does not apply to certain solar energy generation facilities, and those are the ones described in those code sections. And when I looked at those code sections, those are more net metering, customer generator, and small agricultural generator systems that would not apply to those. And it would also not apply to any solar project for which application was filed and approved by the county prior to January 1st, 2021. Last year, they made the revenue share ordinance applicable to under 5 megawatt projects. So that was the change that happened in 2022. So we went into more depth at our last meeting on revenue share, what it is. Mr. Dahl did the modeling of showing different size projects using machinery and tools versus revenue share. And so were there any questions regarding the ordinance?
Yeah, and just a recap. Again, if it was a 25 megawatt or smaller project, the revenue share was more beneficial. It was 25 megawatt or larger, the machinery and tools, I'm sorry, machinery, the real estate tax as assessed by the SCC was the more beneficial route to go. But again, if you remember when we discussed this too, there's still siting agreement. So no matter what project you're doing, if a project comes forward, you can, no matter which model you would have gone with, you can still use the siting agreement to make up the revenue from that particular taxation piece that we're implementing. So,
okay, does anyone have any questions?
And they're still charged for the land.
Correct.
The real estate tax, and there's still the ability to do a negotiation.
I'm sorry, Mr. O'Brien.
There's still the ability to do a negotiation. What do we call it?
The siting agreement. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they would have to pay the rollback taxes as well.
Right.
Yeah, for instance, let's just say we adopted the revenue share, but really, because it's a larger project, the taxation piece would have been better. Well, we can say, well, if we were doing the taxation piece, here's what we would have been receiving, and we can try and negotiate that delta in there, or anything really from the siting agreement. It's pretty open-ended.
Doesn't our machine and tool tax kind of end it after 10 years?
Or it does.
Okay.
It does. That's why on the smaller projects that if you just went with the taxation model, that it's taxed at the machinery and tool tax, and we've got a pretty aggressive step down from depreciation, and then we only tax for the first 10 years. That's why in smaller projects, revenue share is more beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other discussion? If not, we have a motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors advertise that amendments to County Code 20-12-1, 20-12-2, and 20-12-3 for a public hearing to be held October 18, 2023.
Okay. Have a second?
Second.
All right. We have motions made by Mr. Fairchild and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And our last action matters item is addendum number 2 to the agreement with VDOT regarding Watch for Children.
So we received another Watch for Children sign request, and so let me just kind of give you a little backdrop. So VDOT 1 no longer places Watch for Children signs along streets at the request of localities. Localities may, after entering into an agreement with VDOT, place such signs in locations approved by VDOT. All costs associated with erecting, maintaining, and replacing damaged Watch for Children signs are the responsibility of the locality. And again, going back to after entering into an agreement with VDOT, the county has entered into an agreement with VDOT. I think it was back in, it was in the staff report. I apologize, I don't have it right here, but I want to say it was back in 2016 was the first time that the county entered into the initial agreement, and it was for a Watch for Children sign in, it's a subdivision, I want to say it's called, I think it's another subdivision, Sycamore or something, but it's off of North Boston Road somewhere.
Sycamore.
So that, what's that? Sycamore Landing, thank you. Yeah, so that was the first time that the county entered into an agreement and then moved forward with this Watch for Children sign. The second request was about 3 years ago, Panorama off of Miles Jackson Road. They requested the Watch for Children sign in that subdivision. And so now today we've got, and Mr. Charlie White, again, he's the with the Property Owners Association. We've been having some meetings with them, figuring out what they can do. They've actually requested Watch for Children signs, two signs in their neighborhood. So again, they request for two signs to be installed, one at the intersection of Justin Drive, Lexi Lane, and Abbey Road, facing toward Abbey Road, and one on Justin Drive in front of the Sycamore Square Property Owners Association playground for cars to see exiting the subdivision. That the estimated cost would be around $850 per sign to install. They'd have to maintain the VDOT standards. So obviously if the board approved both, it'd be $1,700. So again, here's the first one. This property right here is actually county-owned property, but if you kind of go back here, here's Dollar General right there. So there's Abbey Road, and so they're requesting something there going into the subdivision, whether a car goes that way or the car goes, you know, whichever direction it is, we're going to try and just face it towards going back towards, we would propose to face it going back towards the stoplight. So that's the first sign that they want. Then if you continue to go down Justin Drive towards the end, there's a playground right here. They want one on the playground side for cars that are leaving, going back towards the stoplight, Dollar General, and CVS. The one thing that was brought to my attention, VDOT has, there was some language in their memo that said if there is a playground, they may recommend to do, I think it's a children at playground sign. Let me see here. There was something. Okay, so obviously it's not happy with me right now. There we go, sorry. Where was it? Yeah, there's, so here's one thing that was noted. Signs shall not be installed where indicated as follows. In lieu of a standard playground sign to warn motorists of a designated playground. So I think the one thing we would just want to confirm with VDOT is, I don't think the first sign, the sign at the beginning, I don't think that's an issue. The second sign, I think we may need to get a little clarification from VDOT just on that one, because again, they're proposing a sign near the playground, and I want to make sure that this doesn't conflict with that.
If it conflicts, are we possibly legally liable for anything?
No. Well, I mean, what would happen is VDOT, I mean, VDOT's going to tell you where you can put it, and if it conflicts, they're not going to let you put the sign in place.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think the board could do one of two things. They could say, we want to move forward and we want to approve to put two signs, but if for some reason VDOT says, well, you can't put this sign here because of the playground sign. Now, again, there's this W15-1. Maybe they have a different playground sign you put in, and maybe there's the same process, but this kind of wasn't discussed during all this. Again, the front sign, I don't think is an issue whatsoever because, again, there's no playground there. But this one, since it's right by the playground, that could be an issue. Or maybe there's a playground sign that needs to go in there. Or maybe the sign needs to move back a little bit to some degree. But go back here, sorry.
So can we vote on this motion before you figure this out?
Yeah, I mean, you can. I mean, because let's just say that the board wants to move forward with both of these. If there's any conflict with location number two, and Dan, you correct me if I'm wrong.
Because the resolution right now doesn't have the location listed.
The resolution. Well, the agreement does. The agreement does. But it says plus or minus 50 feet.
So there isn't a sign at the playground at all right now. I've been to the playground. I don't remember.
There's not other than a neighborhood watch sign. That's the only sign that's
there. And do you want Mr. Charlie White to come up? Do you have any questions for him since this was a request by?
Any questions for Mr. White?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. I know he's advocated for this before.
Yes. Yeah. He said there's no sign there other than just saying.
There's a blank agreement and there's a filled out agreement.
Yes. Yes, because there's a template. So do you think if the board, again, location number one, there's not an issue. Location number two.
I mean, the board could either approve the one location tonight or they could defer it to the next meeting.
Yeah,
I mean, and come up with the correct, better location that meets the guidelines.
Yeah, so if you just want to improve the first location, if the board wanted to move forward with something, we could bring back, once we get clarification, we could come back with an amendment number.
I mean, if there's a location, from our perspective, really relevant, if it's, you know, say Mr. White and or VDOT, I mean, do we need to bring it back to us is really the question that I would ask. I don't know that anybody's going to object to. If it's moved 400 feet that way or not, it's the recommendation from VDOT and Mr. White.
The only thing I would maybe say is if you look at the documents, let me see here. So you see here, we have two locations here on the amendment number two, and it talks about additional locations. I think the only thing you could maybe do, you could potentially change the plus or minus 50 feet in front of the playground. I mean, we could
make it 250.
You can make it 250 feet or something like that if the board wants, if their intention is to say we want to approve the sign, but maybe it's not right in front of the playground, maybe it's closer this way, or maybe it's closer past the playground.
Past the playground, and we really put two of them within 300 feet of each other.
Yeah.
It does say facing south, so it had to be facing a certain direction that.
Well, yeah. You know what I would maybe do if the board is so inclined? I would maybe move forward with location number one, and then let's get a little clarity on the watch for children sign under location number two.
Okay, that's agreeable with everyone?
Yeah. Well, I've got some conversation points.
Yeah. If the board wants to approve it, I guess that's cool.
Okay, so you're going to go to the motions.
Yeah, I think Mr. Fairchild.
Mr. Fairchild, you have a comment.
I'm trying to figure my way through this. I'm reminded of a gentleman at the last board meeting who wanted us to pay for trees to be taken down. They had asked for VDOT to do so, and VDOT said it's just not what we do. It's not part of. It's not part of what they do. And so the request was for us to pay to take trees down for public safety. And do I misunderstand that, Mike? What was the gentleman's request to us?
He was just trying to figure out, he said, I can't afford to have a professional tree service come in here and do this.
So what was it, but he came in front of the board, wasn't
he? He was told by certain members at VDOT to get a resolution from the board, to get the support of the board to have these trees removed. That's what he was
for talking VDOT about. To have to remove.
For VDOT to have.
Oh, okay, removed. I took it that he was wanting us to.
No,
okay.
For VDOT, they had told him in the first. That's why I said it was frustrating. The first couple of people he talked to said, "Hey, if you get the board to support this, we'll give you more oomph and we'll come do it. And then they came back and said, no, 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 that's not.
Yeah.
So that's why it was, he wasn't asking us to pay for it.
I got you.
He was just asking for our support to ask VDOT to remove them so that he doesn't drop one across the road, somebody drives into it.
I see.
And we have a major issue.
I was going to say, I think maybe answering to one of your questions, Susan. So I did ask VDOT, I said, again, I think localities can make the HOA pay for it. Two, I think there's a mechanism in place to do that. I mean, that's what the VDOT rep said. But again, going back, previously on two occasions, the board has approved for the county to pay for it previously, but I don't think that's set in stone that it has to be that way, but that has been, on the first two agreements, that's what occurred.
So we have a lot of neighborhoods in Fluvanna where, you know, it's subdivisions, but VDOT maintained roads. And where do we stop that? I understand the need. While I think they have an HOA that probably has a bank account, you know, what about Fox Hollow and Broken Island and Taylor Ridge? And what about a tough, you know, crossroads for, you know, where there's two stop signs out in Kent Store or Scottsville somewhere, where there's houses right on the corner? Where do we stop that? And if there is truly a need, why don't we do that everywhere? We're responding to a request where we don't know that there's a need that the government should participate in. And again, if there is a need there that tax dollars and people's money should go to, then where do we stop it? And doesn't there have to be more needs out there that we're not addressing? I'd almost even wonder about liability. Hey, if you're saying that it's okay for, if there's a need for government to step in and participate at Sycamore Square, and a child gets ran over at Fox Hollow, didn't we understand that there's needs that the government should participate in? And I think about the cost, $850 per sign. I'm reminded of Al Gore's $600 toilet seats and $400 hammers, you know, what he said the government was spending when they took office. You know, I don't know how special the sign is, but I know 4x4s don't get much more special than what Lowe's produces. I went online today, it's $12 for an 8-foot tall 4x4. It was, and I looked at it, I went through and tried to pick pretty nice signs. The children at play sign on the higher end was $40. So you're talking $52, and doing the math, that's 6% of $850 per sign. Let's just say the material costs are somewhere around that. That's $798 in labor per sign. I don't get why we're talking about spending $850 a sign where VDOT doesn't recognize there's a need, where the citizens could do it for a little more than $100. I'm just not sure how this request comes in front of us. And I'd even go as far as say, like Mike, like you said, about the gentleman dropping the tree. You know, people come out and help. I got a post hole digger and some 4x4s in the barn. I don't know why the government has to get involved at the expense of $850 per sign.
Any other comments? And I think when you look at all the subdivisions, and I think they're all kind of laid out differently. Maybe there's a need at some more than at others. And I'm just making a general comment. Anybody else want to comment?
I think Chris's points are all well taken. Mr. Fairchild's points are all well taken. You know, it hasn't really been an issue. I don't think we've done this more than once since I've been around or something like that.
It's only been twice.
What you're saying, and I said, well, we've opened the door now. Somebody says it. No.
Now we're going, to your point, now we're saying what we did it before.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a cost share arrangement is appropriate in something like this. I don't disagree with that, but EDOT has to start, it's on these signs, so we don't have control of the price.
I was sitting on Broken Island dropping a kid off this morning, or this afternoon, and a van came around the curve rolling. I mean, he didn't smoke the tires, but he did everything but smoke the tires to stop. I had to get back on the side of the road, but it's still.
So why don't we put a sign there, to your point? And it was, I mean, it's a general.
Speed limit, I don't think he's paying much attention to that.
Moselle, do you know of something that's different? You said maybe there's something different.
Yeah, I was trying to think about, when I look at Sycamore Square, of course they don't have any sidewalks. So you pretty much have to walk on other people's property right on the road. Houses are closer together. Even, the parking can obscure vision.
I mean, I can kind of tell you how this came about. I mean, they came to the county and the sheriff's office because they had concerns about the safety on the street. I think Mr. White came here before the board before to discuss that. And what's that?
Talking about speeding.
Yeah, speeding. And so we discussed things about cars parked in the road, mailboxes, things like that. And then there was some discussion, the sheriff's office even, I think they set up some radar spots a couple times too in there. And so myself, Ms. Booker, a representative from VDOT met with some of the...
And the sheriff's department.
Two individuals, I think it was Captain Peterson, and I'm trying to remember who else was there. But anyway, met with the Homeowners Association and just kind of discussed the issue. And so from the sheriff's point, from a safety issue, I mean, yes, did they catch some people that were speeding through there? They did, but from a, and again, I don't want to speak, Captain Peterson's right here. Captain Peterson, you want to add anything to that since you were there? I apologize, I didn't see you there.
Sorry, so I had to back. Nothing really to add, unless there's questions. I mean, we did a speed study while we were there. I don't have numbers off the top of my head, but just around about 100 cars, two were actually speeding, going above the limit we would actually stop them at. But I mean, Sycamore Square, that's where I live. It's a smaller, homes are tired, a lot of kids playing out there, so that was there. We put our radar trailers been out there for the last 3 weeks too, which I think Mr. Charlie's been getting some comments about that out there. I'll slow people down, the people that live in our neighborhood forget how fast they're going until they see that speed, that radar sign. I'll tell them they're going too fast. But I'd be happy to ask for any questions about what we did there. I think we spent about a month on it.
All right.
Three or four different times I had deputies out there actually sitting there running radar different spots, specific to Sycamore Square and the complaints of speeding.
We don't have a picture on the sign, do we? To see how sturdy it is or?
I mean, it's on a 4x4 post and the sign. I mean, again, the cost that they give you, I think the $850 is the high water mark. And again, that's the post, the sign, and then the labor to install the sign. And that's
The state installs it?
So usually VDOT does it. There's contractors that install the signs. Like, for instance, for the county and stuff, we've got a contractor that if we have down street signs and stuff like that, we've got a contractor that the county pays to replace down street signs or things like that. So they'll go out there, if the sign gets damaged, there's a cost for the sign, then there's a cost to put the sign in, and they certainly have the expertise to know where to install it as it relates to VDOT's right of way and things like that.
Does that come out of our contingency budget, or where's that typically come from?
So just for the normal stuff, it just generally comes out of, so the dispatch communications, E911, Director Michael Grant's staff kind of oversees that portion of just kind of regular signs here and there.
So there's a budgeted amount for that?
There is a budgeted amount out there.
Do we exceed that budgeted amount yearly or not?
Is that Michael Grant? Michael Grant's staff is actually on Zoom here, and so I don't know if he wants to chime in. I'm sure he'd love to.
What was the question for me?
Do we regularly exceed the budget that you have for the replacement of signs? I guess that's the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, we're just talking about just regular street signs. Mr. O'Brien was asking, do we exceed the budget for just kind of every year replacing general street signs throughout the county?
We do not. On a heavy year, the address signs that go in front of each individual person's house also comes out the same line item. So if we have a big build year, it can push us to the limit. I think we've gone over one time in the last 5-6 years. And that was right before COVID, when we had a lot of construction going on in the county. But as far as the replacement of each of the actual road name signs, we don't go over budget on those.
What's the budget line item?
I believe it's right at $20,000.
And that's in our budget?
That's in the E911 budget.
This budget comes through.
Yeah. And that's basically, again, if someone gets a new address, they pay a fee to the county as part of their building inspection, and then Michael Grant's staff then assigns an address. Well, between the building and Grant's and Michael Grant's staff, they assign an address, and then it's one of the address signs that goes out. But he also handles if we have, you know, street signs or stop signs or things like that that go down. Maybe it's not stop signs, maybe it's just street signs.
Are the roads in Sycamore part of VDOT?
They're VDOT roads.
So in other words, that stop sign that got knocked down years ago, they should put back up.
If there's a stop sign.
In front of Dollar General.
Yes.
And it's still got the wood sticking out the ground. So they'll pull up there every time and the kids will start to roll through.
Oh, no, you know, that sign, that is I actually reached out to VDOT about that sign. That sign is not... That's on Dollar General's property. That is not a VDOT sign. So that is Dollar General's responsibility. Okay. I asked VDOT about that.
I see the wood sticking out the ground every time I drive by there.
Yep. So, but as Mike has established, a new section of Broken Island is probably as dense on the housing. There's no sidewalks. Village Oaks is dense housing. There's no sidewalks. So why wouldn't we proactively, if there's a need, why wouldn't we proactively just do that everywhere?
That would be great. Let's do it everywhere.
Except for the
I'd rather see that than have a child be run over put any value.
There's a whole lot of it. Then why don't we pay to put speed bumps in every subdivision?
I think the point is that each HOA or concerned citizens in a neighborhood have the opportunity to come to us and request.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we give.
Right.
But they have that opportunity to do that. And, you know, neighborhoods may vary in terms of demographic composition, all those kinds of things. You know, if you've got 10 kids in the neighborhood as opposed to 50 kids, then it kind of changes things. And so I don't know that we proactively go out and do it necessarily, but I think when we get a request, we consider it. Got a budget line item for it. Then to your second or third concern is, you know, is this going to escalate? Well, in 12 years, it's been twice, and we have a budget line item for it. And so I would be inclined to just grant this. And, you know, if it comes up that we're getting inundated with these signs and we consider it budget season, you know, consider whether or not we want to have a cost sharing or not.
I'd also add, we haven't established that the HOA. Here we go.
So,
can you shut that down, Kevin?
I'm not sure.
Keep the conversation going. We haven't established that the HOA doesn't have.
Neither.
Okay.
Okay,
we've got a problem happening.
Okay.
I'm going to mute everybody for just a moment.
I
cannot mute him.
Do you want me to leave?
Oh my God. Well, we have to wait for that.
So anyway.
I've got everybody muted for just a moment until I can get rid of these folks.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion?
I was just saying, we've not established that the HOA doesn't have money in their own budget for...
Turn off your camera.
For this.
Yep. I'm
going to close the meeting for a moment. We've got about five different folks who have entered the meeting and are sharing...
Stuff.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm out of Zoom, so there's nothing on Zoom.
I can't move fast enough to shut it down.
Yeah.
So you want us not talking anymore?
No. Just until I can get out of the meeting. Start again in just a moment.
Zoom is nice, but there are certainly challenges.
I tell you what, it'll get your heart going too.
Yes. All right.
Being developed along the
way. Okay, Chris, you were asking something.
I'm just saying, as far as I know, we've not established that the HOA doesn't have the ability to pay for this, so I'm not sure why we'd pay for it without knowing that. I don't know. Maybe they have $12,000 in the bank or something. We're paying $850 per sign for signs that we have nothing that says that there's a need for. Especially in comparison to other municipalities.
That's me. Okay.
I'd also wonder, Dan, any chance there's liability of if government says that there's enough of a need, we have acknowledged if we pay for this that there's a need. And if there's a light community that a child gets hit and those signs weren't there, Mike just gave an example from today. Do we have liability? Can somebody come back around and say, wait a minute, you did it for them and we can show you all the similarities to us and you didn't do it for us and my child just got hit and killed?
Remember, the county has sovereign immunity, so they would have to argue gross negligence or an intentional tort, which that you wouldn't be able to show that. So I don't see where a case would be successful there.
Okay.
Any other questions, concerns? You have to wait until public comment, ma'am.
There is no public comment.
That's the second one.
Before we move on, I mean, it's the discretion of the board as to whether.
It's the second.
Yes.
Okay, any other discussion?
We're trying to decide whether to pass the motion one and wait on the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. Worked out with beat up.
Right. Yeah.
Or to not pass it until... You come back with the second motion?
I'm sorry, Ms. Singer.
What are the options? We can either pass...
Well, I mean, one, you can either pass number one as is, and you can...
Hold off.
You could pass one, and you can select one and not the other, like the sign that's by the playground. You can say, we only want to approve the one that's at the front, but not the second one. You can just hold off on everything until you get clarity, or the board can just say... we want to approve it, but maybe you want cost sharing involved, and we'll have to see what that looks like, and or you just deny them.
Mm-hmm. We have to almost do number one, right? Because VDOT's no longer going to do it, right?
Well, you You don't have to.
Right.
And as Eric said, you could do cost sharing, so on.
That would be motion number two, right? So there's nothing.
Well, no, motion number two, that's just saying where the money's coming from. So motion number one is the board says we want to move forward with something. Again, in the agreement that it's listed, we have the two signs there, but if the board says we only want to do the one sign, you would move forward with motion number one. Motion number two is just saying, here's where the money's coming from to install the sign, if the board wants to pay for it. If the board doesn't want to pay for it, then I guess I would just need to work with Dan and then the HOA to go back to the HOA. And if the board says we don't want to pay for it, what does that look like?
We have an MOU.
We're going to have to have some type of memorandum of agreement or understanding on who's responsible for what.
So the board would be suggesting that it happens or endorsing that it happens without a financial commitment?
Yes. Now, I think what I would say, this is what I would say, if you don't want to pay for it, I probably wouldn't move forward with motion number one at this point. Because really what you're going to want to do, you would probably want to do some type of MOU or memorandum of agreement at the same time you do the approval of the sign. Because once you approve the agreement for the sign, then that's the board saying we agree to move forward with this.
And say, well, we agree to pay though.
Well,
it says the county's responsible for the cost in the agreement.
Yes. Yeah. So if there's another mechanism where the agreement says the county is responsible, there's going to have to be another agreement that says such and such HOA or neighborhood pays the county tax.
When you have neighborhoods that don't have HOAs, like I know where my sister lives, Cunningham Meadows, they don't have an HOA. So you have to look at Brad Austin neighborhoods that don't have HOAs. How would you do?
We can always revise the agreement at any point in time as well. So yeah. There's nothing stopping. I mean, you know, I don't think that Mr. Fairchild has bad points at all. I think that if you look at this particular request, one of three in 12 years, that it's probably not worth legal time, board's time, administration time to try to figure this out, you know, at this point in time. So I'm ready to make a motion.
Let me ask you a question real quick. If we did this, because we haven't said anything about doing cost sharing or anything else prior to this, but we then come back and do something that says, if we do this again, this will be done at a 50-50 cost share or whatever.
Well, just real quickly, the point that I was trying to make with the line item on the budget is if we're not exceeding that, then it's really not a problem, right? Because we've already got this budgeted in.
But could we reduce the line item?
Well, we could reduce the line item, but I would say that comes up budget season, and then you could argue whether you're going to do this or not. I mean, I have the $20,000. I don't know if they're spending $5,000, $10,000 or not, but keep in mind, if they're only spending $10,000, it gets returned to the budget anyway.
But not to the taxpayers.
Well, that's our decision.
Right.
Right? I mean, it gets returned to the general fund. We can do what we want to do with that.
Yeah.
Right? So I just think that here's an example where we have something budgeted in. There's a specific request. We can act on it now. If it becomes problematic and exceeds the budget, then you know, board can make a decision at that point in time.
And just a little, these signs when they've come through, they haven't generally gone through the E911 budget. I think last time the county worked with the contractor, and this is just kind of a behind the scenes thing. Kind of went through the public works budget. I mean, again, it's all county funds, but. Again, just some clarity, because the E911 budget and the sheriff's budget are kind of under the sheriff's purview. I don't have any authority necessarily to cut the sheriff's budget per se. That's a board thing, or say money needs to be paid out of the sheriff's
budget. And or when we redo the budget, we look at that and look at that line item and say, okay, we'll transfer this amount into the our budget line item for that, if that's the way that needs to be done.
Well, it sounds like we are all over the place. And what we want to do, maybe we need to put a motion out and see what happens to it.
I'm with the Board of Supervisors approve addendum number two, the original agreement for the installation and maintenance of Watch for Children signs between the county and Fluvanna and the Virginia Department of Transportation, and author the county administrator to execute the addendum, subject to approval to form by the county attorney.
Second.
And Mr. O'Brien, I just want to make one clarification. That was for both locations, correct?
No, that's motion number one I've only made.
Yes, but motion number one, just for clarity, motion number one, it says the addendum number two.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Watch your children
to
sign.
Execute addendum.
Yes.
Make it watch children sign.
Well, what I'm saying is here, this
sorry,
is amendment.
I didn't catch that. Yes, thank you. So, one.
The amendment, you want to approve addendum number two, but you only want to approve
for one sign.
The one location, the first location at the beginning of the development.
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien. Do we have a second? So the motion
passed. I'll second.
Second. All right, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien and a second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
And then, so motion number two, again, you would have to say not to exceed $850.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer in amount not to exceed $850 from the FY24 BO's contingency to the Public Works budget to cover costs associated with the Watch for Children signs requesting addendum number two.
As amended.
As amended between the County of Fluvanna and the Virginia Department of Transportation.
Do we have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Okay. All right. We don't have any appointments. So the next thing we have, consent agenda. We have F, minutes of September the 6th, 2023, G, 2023 Avalanche Purchase Agreement, number 3, LMVRS, H, Partnership Agreement between Fluvanna County and the Fluvanna Chamber of Commerce, I, accept dedication of right-of-way from Velma of Townsend, J, contract with Motorola Solution, Inc., Reflect Software and Command Central Upgrade. K, Amendment to Waste and Refuse Collection and Removal Contract and Recycling Service Agreement with BFI Waste Services. L, Accounts Payable Report for August 2023. M, Proclaiming October as National Community Planning Month. N, CRMF Central Elementary Electrical Relay. O, CRMF Fluvanna County High School HVAC Exhaust Fan Motor. And that's it. Would someone please, anyone want to pull anything from the consent agenda for discussion? If not, may we have a motion to
so
accept?
Moved.
Who said so moved?
Right.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. We have Mr. O'Brien, approval of the consent agenda, and Mr. Sheridan second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. So it is approved. Next, we have unfinished business. Do we have anything to add?
I just want to, whether it's new or unfinished, I want to say we have a young lady in the audience, Lydia Westfall, that I've come to know through her raising lambs, and I bought one of them at the fair. I got one in the auction in the fair, and just what a great job and the initiative she took in reaching out and saying, "Would you please come out and participate?" And just a young lady with real go-getter initiative, and I think she's going to do great things. And on top of that, the company who cut the lamb up for meat said that it was one of the fattest lambs they've ever had, and it shows in the fact that I had to give some meat to my son so I could close the freezer. So just want to commend her for a great job, and proud she's a part of our community.
Thank you.
I do have unfinished business, I guess, would fall under. I was approached by FLPP leadership asking about why and or are they being charged a fee to use the Fork Union Center. So maybe Mr. Spitzer can address that. And likewise, I want to be able to use the room back here. We're told basically that they needed to get board approval to do that because of the MOU with the Flavanna Arts Council. So FLDP is essentially, you know, helping with educating citizens as to, you know, the county's functions and governance. We provide them a line item, and so it seems a little incongruous that we're charging them for the use of a room. And it also seems a little incongruous that, you know, what is a facility that has been used previously can't be used. So I'd like to get some feedback on that and see if we can assist FLDP in terms of clarity. I mean, it's not a big fee, but it's still kind of sort of the point of why are they paying $75 to use that facility if they're essentially doing what we're doing. And maybe that needs to happen because of the MOUs that we have in place and because of the policies that Parks and Rec has in place. It's just a change, and I'd just like some clarification on that.
I mean, to go back to the, I missed the one point you said regarding the performing arts. I mean,
I believe the Flavanna Arts Council told them that they couldn't use the rear room back here.
Anderson's room.
Yeah, so I know
without
that
approval from the board because of the MOU. So that's, you know, if that's the case, then the board.
So they originally wanted to have their meeting in here on a
Thursday night.
And again, per our MOU, that is outside of the county's space time in this space. So per our MOU with the Arts Council, we said you have to go to the Arts Council to be able to utilize this space at that time. And so that's an Arts Council thing.
So why would they say they had to come back to us to do that?
We have to amend the MOU with the Arts Council.
I guess
along those lines, I'd like to know how many organizations have asked for the use of the rooms and the use of the facilities, and how often have they been approved?
What's that? Yeah, you're more familiar with.
Okay, Ms. Kelly.
I get away with not coming up here tonight. I'm a little nervous about leaving that over there. I don't know how many folks have asked to use the space going through the Arts Council. I don't know that answer. The county hasn't been approached by any other groups to use this space. In terms of the using the Fork Union Community Center, I think there's a little bit of gray area there. So typically, nonprofits are charged 50% of whatever the rental rate would be. Going back and looking into, I shouldn't say going back, I didn't need to do very much research, but being reminded that FLDP is associated with the Cooperative Extension might change what that relationship is or needs to be. I think we worry when we get into that group gets this thing for free, 25% off, whatever it is, where that line is. We don't have an MOU with FLDP or with FLAG, but you're right, we do. They get money from the board. So it's a different sort of relationship, and I think we probably do need to review how we do that with them. I think we have space for them somewhere. It's just finding out how we do that, and we do that in a fair across the board.
One of the purposes of their bringing people to this facility was to promote the arts, so I find that difficult to understand.
That's an Art Council.
I understand that, and if that's the case, and that's why I asked the question, how often has it been asked, and maybe we need to revisit the MOU, because if it's simply being applied in such a restrictive manner that other organizations can't have access to the facility, I don't think that was our intention.
I think I am aware of twice that I think that we've been made aware of, and then it could be more that there's been an outside organization that tried to use the space.
I'd have to go back.
That maybe wasn't approved. Yeah. And I don't know the reasoning why that was. But
I know it's a new agreement, and I know there's not a lot of data on it, but I think it's, you know, again, promoting the arts, bringing people to look at the facility.
Yeah.
The facility seems pretty what you would expect, you would want to promote, right?
Yeah, and you'd go back to FLDP for the other space. Again, we as Ms. Harris said, we were reminded that they are affiliated through the cooperative extension. And so certainly if the cooperative extension uses the stage room, they don't get charged, obviously, to use it. And so there's this, again, we're just trying to, be consistent with outside nonprofits and agencies, who uses it, who gets charged, what, you know, just trying to have some consistency.
And that's what I had mentioned to them. I said this may be part of it. I just mentioned that I would bring it up. And then, you know,
there's a staffing concern as well, if we don't have staff there during the time that it's being used. And that's the reason for the fee, is to pay staff. That particular night, I will actually be there. So staffing is sort of taken care of. So we'll revisit that and come to some sort of reasonable, usable space for them. So
I'd also say we need to then think about it facilities-wide for all the rec-type facilities and everything that we have in the county. Fluvanna Girls Softball League out here put about $180,000 into that softball field between the dugouts and the concession stand, the brand new backstop. You know, that's a lot of money, but FGSL pays yearly, you know, season fees to use that field. And as you said, Tony, somewhat the opposite with FLDP, we're giving them money, and then we would allow them free. I'm not against FLDP having such uses. It just comes to, we've got to be, in my opinion, consistent of how we do things. And if Fluvanna Girls Softball League showed up here next month and said, what about us? What would we say?
I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah. I'm just bringing up the point. I don't disagree with that at all. And it wasn't a big fee. It was just kind of, it's a change. Why did it change?
Yeah.
You know, what's up with that? That's all. What's up with that?
It's good if these things do come up so that we can see whether we need to go back and revisit. Mrs. Fitzgerald, you are anxious to come forward.
Last year, we had a dog class when they were holding FLDP, so we were already staffed in the building. Mm-hmm. That's why they did not get charged last year. We already had a class in there. Mm-hmm. So we had staff there. This year, we have no class. So that's why I have to actually bring staff in. It's what it is.
So again, Ms.
I can't.
Ms. Harris is going to be there. So, I mean, we do have staff
now.
Again, usually it's to cover staff time to open the building and make sure the building's, you know, closed down and stuff like that. That's mainly what the fees are for.
Yeah, right? We still charge the sports programs that don't have a building to be opened and don't have staff out on the field while those programs are operating.
That's the fee that the board came up with, and it's $3 a child per season.
Whatever it is, I'm just saying, in comparison, that there are, you know, should we be in a situation where we're charging fees to some organizations and not others?
But we do mow grass and drag ball fields and stuff for them that we wouldn't do in a building. So they
but
do
you maintain the building.
That's why they should have to pay, I think, a small fee.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion.
I'm not disagreeing with any of that. I'm just bringing it up as something that had changed. There wasn't a lot of clarity as to what was it under, at least from what I was told, as to why the change had occurred. And certainly when we're talking about, you know, Carisbrook and the MOU with the Arts Council, you know, it's just important to know, is it working the way we want it to work? That's all.
Okay, so from this conversation that we have just had, does that leave some work for us to do?
That leaves some work for us to do.
We have to do to bring it back, get some clarity.
Yeah, I think it also highlights the need then.
It's always good to have it.
MOUs across.
Sure, to have questions come up so you can look at things.
Groups, agencies, and organizations that we are. However we're affiliated with them, we need to take a good look at how we're doing that.
I agree.
So we are fair and consistent.
And we're learning.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yep. All right, anything else?
Yeah, and again, to add to that, there's a lot of things that were just in the past were just verbal handshakes and then there's nothing in place.
Oh boy.
So we're trying to get more of these structures in place. It just
takes time.
It takes work and all time.
So. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Any other new business?
New business, real quick. I want to throw this out. I know we've got solars coming in front of us and things of that nature. And this is just to throw it out there, if y'all would be interested in doing this. Not a decision tonight, but I was approached, and I will tell you, it's my brother-in-law, but he is the president of the Southern Virginia Small Business Association, and he works for a construction company, and they have been building solar projects. And if we were interested in hearing of some of the requirements they put on the builders, talking about, what's that little agreement thing?
The siting agreement.
Siting agreements, things of that nature. He has several folks that are part of that Southern Virginia. They'd be glad to come sit down and meet with us if we had questions. Just if y'all decide to do, let me know. We can set something up. I think if he'd be glad to do that with planning or Board of Supervisors or what?
And, you know, there's a number of people, including in our own community, that are really educated on this stuff. And I've tried to think of how you could have a forum where people from different perspectives, I'm almost afraid to hear from one person or one organization, but hearing from multiple sides, because there's still so much that's gray area or unknown that it's hard to say when you, such as a gentleman from Louisa that's been asking to, you know, to meet with each of us about another solar field here in the county. And, you know, it's hard to say whether I should meet with him because.
Who is this? I haven't heard of that one.
And who he's met with at least.
Yeah. Well, I'm not talking about a private person. This is somebody that just, as an outsider, if we have questions about it, then I, like I said, you know, what we do with the other stuff is up to us.
Yeah.
If you'd be interested, like his contact information, we'll want to talk. But he's willing. He texted me while we were meeting.
Said, yeah.
Well, especially if we're going to be talking about siting agreements in the future, I think, you know, the board being educated on that's
positive. Can he let us know what he'll be talking about in some kind of framework.
I will so reach out to him and send something to y'all.
That would help.
Because
like I said, I just want to make sure I was up front.
Yeah.
It's my brother-in-law.
Like Mario Kuhar, that's in our neighborhood, is head of all that for Google, or pretty high in that for Google worldwide. So he's not somebody, one, he's super educated in it. Two, he's not a developer wanting to do solar. And I thought of, should we have Mario come talk to us, but then I thought, then there's going to be other sides of what Mario says that people are going to want to have input, and Mario is going to potentially take us in a direction that we haven't heard the other side. It's a tough thing trying to figure out who to listen to.
And the TJPC does do some forums, and I know that a year or so ago they did a forum on solar, and they had various different presenters from different fields present. And it was very interesting.
Yeah, we heard four people at the Saul and what was it?
Soil and
four different.
Just wanted to bring that up.
Too much information.
With some different perspectives, those four people we heard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's a good idea to have him send, if he's interested, have him send us maybe some outline of what he'd be advising us on.
Absolutely.
Do we have a meeting somewhere? I had something on my calendar. I can't find it, and when I find it, I'll ask you back.
On Friday?
Yeah.
I feel like there's something on
something. Friday.
It was some. The RBC's got something on the 25th, I think.
Right. Okay, well, I can't find it. I should have jotted it down when I thought about it. All right, anything else with unfinished and new business? If not, I will open the second public comments. If you'd like to speak to the board, would you come to the lectern here and give your name and address? And you have 5 minutes. Anyone like to speak to the board? Anyone?
Are we online?
No, we just with.
Yeah, that young lady stepping up.
Yes, young lady, come forward.
I don't remember her last name.
Yes.
So, hello.
Hello.
I'm Lydia Westfall. I live on 1485 Transco Road. I wanted to give a huge thank you to Mr. Fairchild for purchasing my market animal at the fair this year. It's thanks to sponsors and supporters like you that 4-H continues to be able to make the impact it does on youth all across the nation. 4-H seeks to equip youth to become the leaders of tomorrow. Now, how does that apply to Fluvanna? One of the main areas of 4-H is youth development, particularly in the area of agriculture. A major topic here in Fluvanna is to preserve Fluvanna's rural nature. This depends on the future generation carrying the culture over and bearing an awareness on how rural life functions. Through the 4-H program, youth gain valuable skills through hard work involved in getting up every morning to deal with frozen hoses, monitoring for potential health crises, and caring for their animals day in and day out, sometimes for up to 2 years. Because of the incentive 4-H provides for youth to raise their own livestock, they will forever carry with them the knowledge of responsible animal husbandry and the challenges that farmers may face. While many may not end up pursuing a career in agriculture, they will bear that experience with them to the public square. Now, I'm going to give that a bit of a personal note. I actually grew up in Chile, metropolitan Chile to be precise, and coming to rural Virginia was very different. Out in the middle of nowhere, closest grocery store, at least 20 minutes away, not just around the corner, and working with animals and having that agricultural experience really changed my perspective on the matter. Most people, when they see a neatly packaged chicken coming in from the grocery store, they have no idea what all has gone into that, the hard work, the money, and all the effort that a producer has put into it. But wait, 4-H is more than just agriculture. The program actually operates within four pillars. One, of course, being agriculture, but there's also STEM, healthy living, and civic engagement. This provides active youth with skills beyond just farming, with public speaking contests, youth and government opportunities, and ambassador programs where they can educate others about their passion areas. I would also like to mention that because there is another benefit particularly towards the ag-related field, which is that a lot of youth who participate in 4-H may not have anything to do with agriculture at all. However, they interact with their peers who do agriculture. They take sheep to the county fair, raise a steer to take to the state fair, or just work on their farm at home. I can guarantee you that a few of my friends understand the challenges faced with poultry preservation, because I'm probably a bit too much of a chatterbox, particularly where my chickens are concerned. So if you know any youth involved in 4-H, please ask them about their project. Also, thank you again, Mr. Fairchild.
Thank you. I just ate lamb chops yesterday that were delicious.
I'm glad. Well,
I was, you're talking about the good 4-H. We got a young lady who's now teaching in Oklahoma State University, who came up through 4-H and through that. Young lady from New England, Humphrey. And she's in Ireland right now speaking.
Well,
yeah, she's quite the young lady.
I don't know if you ever met her. But
I don't believe so, no.
And she's going to be a state director of agriculture.
Oh, I can see that in a heartbeat.
Well, good job, thank you.
Thank you
so much.
And yeah, great program.
It is. been around. Yeah. Hope it never goes away. Boy, too.
Aaron Switzer, I'm going to speak as Director of Parks and Rec. We are turning our lights on at Pleasant Grove Park on Monday. They will be turned on for softball and soccer. Soccer will be turned off at 8:15 every night. Softball will be at 7:15 or 9:15. And that goes 15 minutes past the scheduled time of the practice so that they can get to the car before it goes dark. I'm trying to be nice. I give you 15 minutes after your practice. It's going to be dark out there.
Wow.
And I sent Ian an email so we can send pictures. I took pictures of it the other day. Mm-hmm. It's all programmable on my phone, so I can set schedules, turn things on and off if I need to.
When do the lights go off on the Frisbee golf course?
Yeah. That'll be coming.
And with that, they are in the process right now of redoing the lights at the middle school.
Wow.
So we will be lit up every night, Monday through Friday at the park until around 9:15.
You always bring such good news.
They look great, too. I was out there. I can turn them on and off each field by my phone so I can have direction of blood.
You can turn them on right now if you want.
I could, and then go out there and see if they're working.
Can you change the hue, the colors?
Nope. I can't make them go up and down and crazy when somebody scores. I don't know how to do all that. But you can really, the LEDs look really good on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, compared to what a halogen light would look like.
All right.
So, I just wanted to share the news.
Thank you.
And can I get some direction from the board on one thing? So we've had a lot of weekend events kind of happening here, and so we want to get the coffee and conversation one on the schedule here. So we were looking at Saturday, October 21st. We were planning on doing it at, we just need to confirm with Lake Monticello, but we were thinking about doing it at the Lake Monticello firehouse, the Maple Room. There's good amount of space in there. Just wanted to see from the board's standpoint if that would work from a date, and again, Saturday, October 21st, if that would work with everyone.
You said you would.
And this is like what's done in 14?
Correct.
Well, if it's more than three people there, we have to announce a special meeting.
Correct.
So I will.
21st, I'll probably get.
21st.
Saturday
the
21st.
Oh,
I'll
plan
to be there.
You'll
put that on the calendar.
Yep.
Okay.
Like I said,
and it's where at the Maple Room?
Waiting on confirmation.
We're waiting on confirmation.
You said, what's it?
What time?
On Saturday, October 21st.
Oh, yeah.
At what time?
What time would we say? Probably
9-ish to 2-ish.
Yeah. I think we had scheduled 9 to 1 last time.
I think it was 10 to maybe 9 to 12. We went far over what we had actually scheduled.
A lot of coffee.
So if there's three board members,
it's from 9 to.
We don't have the time set. We will get you the time. We want to check on date. It's going to be sometime early, early-ish morning, not early morning, and into early afternoon.
Okay. All right.
I'll definitely want to be there.
Where this other place we were going.
And again, we can have three or more. We just have to advertise.
Correct.
Just have to advertise. Yeah. Special meeting of the board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if we think there's gonna be more than three there, I mean, let's. I think we just go ahead and advertise and.
Okay. All right.
We'll do it too.
So we've.
Madam Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A7, and Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, county attorney's performance, litigation, Gate Plaza LLC versus Savannah County Board of Supervisors, Legal Matters, Fluvanna Rescue Squad, Inc.
All right, can we have a second?
Second.
The motion is made by Mr. Bryant for closed session and second by Ms. Barrett. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Board of Supervisors convene again in open session Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion in which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second by Mr. O'Brien and a second by Mr. Fairchild. And I'll take individual votes. Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Ms. Inker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan?
Aye.
And Chair says aye. We have motions to come out of
yes, ma'am. I've got you right
session. Mr. Sheridan?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution approving donation of equipment from Free County Rescue Squad Incorporated for the use by the Fluvanna County Department of Emergency Services.
All right, do we have a second? We have a motion by Ms. Sheridan, second by Ms. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
And anyone opposed? Aye. Chair votes aye. Next.
Motion number two. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution approving deed of gift as amended for real property from Fluvanna Rescue Squad Incorporated for the use by the Fluvanna County Department of Emergency Services.
Okay, motion by Mr. Sheridan. And do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Ear. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
Now, before I have to complain, Caitlin was too efficient and she took my chocolates.
And by the way, since we are so alike, I have to say I was kidding about the lamb. I did approve that it be that it did approve the amount that it went for auction. I don't want her on the listen to this tomorrow going.
Was it a golden lamb?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
It just tastes like it.
Yeah. Do we have a second to adjourn? Second. All right. Most by Mrs. Sheridan to adjourn. Second by Mrs. Steele. Anyone opposed? Come on, somebody needs your pose.
I did that one.